40. So this is Forrest Solis interviewing Margaret Holtz for the Creative Push Project on September 13th at 1:40. So to just start out with, why don't you just tell us a little bit about yourself while Ashley's addressing the levels and things like that.
I'm 62 years old. I live in Michigan and in Phoenix. I have been a single mother for 22 years.
I'm going to adjust my seat too while we're... You're one of six girls.
I'm one of six daughters. My mother died when I was 9. My dad remarried when I was 10. He remarried a woman who I thought was the evil stepmother until I had 4 children of my own. And then I realized she was a saint.
Yeah, I can't imagine.
And my 5 sisters and I, all except for Judy is the exception that had a terrible birth because she had 2 uteruses. We all had simple, natural childbirths. So we were very lucky.
I gotta get Judy.
You should get Judy.
I don't know how to make that happen. Why don't you... So
Judy does want to come here.
Oh, good. Yeah, we'll do that. So we can start with my birth. If you can talk about the conception, you know, was it planned, desired? Take us back to that time. You know, set up the location, maybe the time in your life.
It was 1976, and I was married to a man who did not want to be married to a smoker. And so that was one of our big arguments, until I decided I wanted to have a baby, and that was a good reason to quit smoking. So I went through hypnosis, and it was successful, and then I started using my hands to make little felt Christmas ornaments and things like that. And lo and behold, I got pregnant unexpectedly, and told everybody at work, in an elevator, wherever I was. I told the grocery store clerk I was having a baby, and then 3 months later I lost it. And then I had to tell everybody that I lost the baby. And I went in, back in that day, they made you have an emergency DNC. So I went in for the emergency DNC, and I was told not to try to get pregnant again for 6 months. And in 2 months I was pregnant with my daughter, Forrest. And it was a good pregnancy. Never any morning sickness. I gained 45 pounds. I'd look at my husband. I'd be sitting on the bathroom vanity close to the mirror, putting M&M's in Frito scoops, crying, "Why am I so fat?" And he'd be like, "Oh, yay. Let's think." That's the scientist in him. Well, let's see, why is she so fat?
I need to pause so I can laugh out loud. My goodness. So what was Dad's response when you got pregnant, though? Was he on board with having a baby?
He was very sad when I lost the baby. I'll tell you a private story. I was over at Aunt Judy's house, and I knew that I was spotting. And so I was going to the doctor, and he said, "Lay down, get your feet up." And I wanted that baby so bad that I remember if I had gas and had to push a poop out, I think, "Oh, I'm going to lose the baby." But, you know, pooping has nothing to do with whether or not you're going to lose a baby.
I don't know why I'm finding this so funny. I wonder if it's just because you're my mother.
Can I laugh?
Yes, you can. Like, it's all edited out. Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't know if that's too loud here.
But anyway, so then, yes, I did lose the baby. And I remember your father was so sweet and so sad. And had the DNC, came home, had to tell everybody at work, you know, that I'd lost the baby. And we weren't trying to, but a few months later I was pregnant with you.
So you were 3 months pregnant when you had the miscarriage?
Yes.
Did you feel pregnant?
Well, yes, because when it's your first pregnancy, you just think every little anything is, oh, I'm pregnant, you know. Just anything, you're so acutely aware of your body. And so, yeah, I think I probably shouldn't have because it was probably as big as a pea. But, yes, I thought I felt pregnant.
That probably made it worse, too.
Yeah. And then my sisters had lost babies, but nobody ever talked about it. So many of them had lost their first pregnancy, which is really natural. The body tends to do that.
Yeah, it's more common than I think people realize. Yeah. Okay, so then you were pregnant the second time, and then did you tell people?
I told people all again right immediately afterwards, And the pregnancy was good. I remember back in 79, 78 when I was pregnant, we wore those pants with those big panels in the front, and then the little short baby doll shirts that you could actually see the panel in the front, and it went from hip to hip, way down into your thighs. They were the worst pants and the worst little shirts. Now, if that's not an image, I don't know what is.
There was quite a bit of fashion faux pas happening. But, like, the high collars and then the long sleeves.
Oh, yeah.
And the things that went floor length.
Yeah.
Like...
And then don't forget the little puff. You had that little puff sleeve.
Yeah, so then, okay, so you told everyone and the baby took. Now, was there an issue with the DNC?
No issue with the DNC. Yeah, no. You baby took. Everything was fine. Except for all the weight gain. I didn't have any complications whatsoever.
Can you tell the story where you were like, look at these tits?
I will. That's after the baby came.
Oh, it is when you were nursing.
Yes.
Oh, okay. I'll have to talk.
Yeah.
Okay, so then, did you have a support network? I mean, you weren't...
I didn't, because I had moved from New Orleans, where my very favorite sister lived, and Robert had been transferred to Houston, so I lived in Houston with him, and he, no, I did not have a support network, except for via the telephone. And, but I don't remember that being a problem, because I was so active and, you know, made friends easily, so that wasn't a big issue.
So you had female friends that had kids?
Not so many that had kids. I just was so thrilled to have my own, you know, and I'm just family-oriented. I'm not one that needs a huge group.
So was there... Were you practicing Lamaze?
I was practicing Lamaze, yes. That was very interesting. And I just thought it was a godsend, that it helped so much. And I took it very seriously.
Do you want water? I thought that's your water there. Yeah, you can take your time.
So I would practice Lamaze at home, and which really, really helped during the birthing process. Because when I went into labor, well, first of all, I had Braxton Hicks contractions for 3 months before labor. So every day it felt like, is today the day? And then I went past my due date, and so the Braxton Hicks were getting pretty severe. So I thought, well, I must be in labor. And I had your dad take me to the hospital, and they examined me, and nothing was really happening, but they kept me overnight. And your dad was really so cute, because he was sitting in all night long, just a metal chair with his hands on his forehead, head down on the bed, just trying to rest like that. Then they released me the next morning, went home, and sure enough, the next day, or that day, actually went into real labor, and so went into the hospital. But I went in too early. And so they lay you on the bed, they strap you into the fetal monitor, and you don't move. Back in that day, you just did not move. You got an IV, and you did not move. And so labor was so long and so prolonged and exhausting, really just tremendously exhausting. And as it was getting closer to being dilated 10 centimeters and totally effaced, they gave me some Demerol. And then when it came time to push, it was so hard to push. I just had nothing. I mean, it was like just in la-la land. But I finally got you out, and... I remember Robert and I were just so thrilled. This little girl with just this long to the ears hair and biggest crying baby I've ever seen in my life. Just so, so cute.
So I'm going to go back to a couple points. So you were going
to... Try not to say you or your dad, because in the editing it won't make...
Okay,
for
so
other people listening, so just say the father or the baby, or you can use names for us
too.
Okay,
use my
name. I wondered about that.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Okay, the Lamaze. So Lamaze was like one of the, at the time it was pretty new, I think, and it was the first time the father was really integrated into the process. So can you talk about how Robert was with that? I mean, was he helping you breathe, or did he go to the classes with you?
Robert did go to the classes, and he did participate, but at home I did everything myself. And even having the babies, I was more comfortable doing it on my own. To me, to have someone rubbing your back or rubbing your leg or rubbing your head or rubbing, are you okay, constantly asking questions, would have made me made the process much more difficult.
So during the delivery, or just the labor experience in the hospital, when Dad was in the room, did he was there like throughout the entire time, even when I was born?
Yes. And then I did have to have an episiotomy, which was kind of a shock for me. Just the cutting and the stitching, and then the pain afterwards. But Robert was not a very... he's scientific, and so the emotional end of it was never really there, you know. So, but I was so filled with emotion that I don't think I noticed that it wasn't there.
He's never going to hear this anyway. But so when I had the episiotomy, I had an epidural. So what is it like if you don't have an epidural?
The episiotomy, when you don't have an epidural, is just a lot of local shots. You had the local shots too. I don't think you remember, but you had the episiotomy. I mean the epidural.
So you felt syringes and
you feel syringes, and then but you feel the tugging from the stitching.
Wow. So was there anything about the experience that was surprising or you didn't feel prepared for?
Just the first child, you're just not prepared for what real contractions are like, and what real labor is like. So you go in, I think so many people make the mistake of going in too soon.
So how would you describe the difference between like the Braxton Hicks and the real contractions?
Pain is the difference. Some of them are just uncomfortable. Real contractions really hurt.
Did you carry high or low?
Very low. I carried very low, which was nice. The baby didn't have to drop that far.
When is this going to happen?
It never did.
Okay, so then, did you have hemorrhoids and stuff like I did?
I had tremendous hemorrhoids. I have never not had hemorrhoids after that.
Okay, so then, baby's born. Do you remember what the process was? Was it similar to what I went through, or...?
The process for you being... For Forrest being born is one of... very clinical. It's not like it is today where people are invited in the room, and it just is so clinical, and it was not as friendly as it is now. You know, it's just cut and dry clinical.
So what was the process? They took the baby, washed the baby, weighed the baby, handed it, you the
all
baby?
Of all of that is done outside of you. In those days, it was done not in that same room.
So
you were in a delivery room. You went from a labor room to a delivery room.
Really?
Very clinical. With the it's like a small operating room. Then they whisk the baby away, clean it, bring it back, and I tried nursing right away.
I keep saying so. You're gonna have to. I don't know how you're gonna figure that out.
You guys are both talking over each other.
So tell us to stop.
Yeah.
It's fine.
You should stop, though, too, when I'm talking, because
okay.
She can't edit out those two separate voices.
Okay.
And I'll try to raise my hand, which
okay.
implies that I want to make a comment.
Okay.
But so when after the baby was born, did they just remove the baby to a different space completely and you were just left there alone?
Yes. After the baby is born, they left. I was in the delivery room getting my episiotomy sewn up. The baby is taken away, and when you want to see the baby, they don't bring it to you. You get to see it in the nursery glass first, and then hours later they bring you the baby.
Wow. So these days there's like skin-to-skin contact and immediate nursing. Can you address that process? Like when you saw the baby, were you nursing?
When I saw the baby, I immediately started nursing.
So you were up and about looking at the baby through the glass?
They would take you in a wheelchair.
And then you go back to a different room from the delivery room?
You go back to your room, your recovery room.
And then they bring the baby at some point after that?
Yes, not too long after. They just clean it up, put the little hat on, put the little clothes on, bundle it up in its swaddle, and then bringing the baby in for you to bond with and to nurse.
So how was the nursing?
I found the nursing so simple. I thought it was awesome. I remember one time I had taken a shower. I was so hugely engorged. I never had big breasts until my first baby. I was so engorged. And I came out to Robert and said, "Look at these tits." They were huge. And he was like, "Oh, my God." They were huge, but they were rocks. I mean, lumpy rocks.
So you produced a lot of milk.
I could have fed a small nation.
So sometimes, you know, when you would just talk about the nursing process and you would mention, like, that their mouths would be, like, just full of milk. Or, can you elaborate a little bit more on that, or is that more with later children?
No, that happened with Forrest, too. I would nurse, and I could feel a letdown, and the baby would be suckling, and then the milk would come with the letdown, and they'd pull away, and five or six streams of milk would be shooting them in the face, all under the neck. They smelled like cottage cheese. And poor little things, they just about suffocate.
Because it's coming so fast.
So fast.
It's very funny. So would you have, how were you, did you anticipate the whole coming home part? Was there like a little nursery, or how did you think about that? Did you know the sex?
After I had you?
No, before. Just to set, buy clothes and to set up a space.
And we were not told sex at that time. But the nursery was decorated in Disney things. I remember Fantasia kind of looking stuff. And we were young. We didn't have a lot of money. So there was a crib, and there was a small bed for me in case I needed it, and a rocking chair. And thank God Forrest took a pacifier, because she was a fussy baby and would have loved to have been attached to the breast the whole time.
So let's see, how do we want to transition? Did you want to mention anything about recovery or physically recovering? Did the weight come off right away?
The weight came off right away. I was very surprised. I was very thin shortly after having Forrest, which I have to admit was very nice. The sad part about my story is that the boobs did not last.
And the divorce.
And then I got divorced 15 months after, because I was just so into being a parent, and Robert and I were just so incompatible.
So then, can you maybe just briefly talk about what that was? I mean, did you go live with Judy with a newborn baby? Like, how did...
I got divorced when Forrest was 15 months old, and I moved from Houston to New Orleans and lived with Judy for a little bit, found it my own apartment. It was actually like a duplex, living next door to the owner's mother, who was a little Italian lady who adored Forrest and watched her while I worked. And Robert would fly in from Houston very regularly, come and visit us, have dinner with us, and because it was hard for him, you know, to have such a young child. But babies grow up real quick. You know, before I knew it, Forrest was flying back and forth to see him on her own. He was coming regularly to see her. It just turned out to be okay.
Is there anything you want to say to kind of summarize that story? Because we might break them up into two separate stories. You know what I mean? So, like, if you reflect on the experience, is there anything that you would... Because we're separating them into themes. Because some people will talk about having faith, you know, like having to have faith in their bodies and the experience. Or, like in my case, it was like trauma, you know what I mean, was one of the major things. Or, you know what I mean? Is there any way that you can sum it up a little bit?
No, I don't have a summary. I know I do remember being sad that I didn't have my family nearby. But Robert's family was so devoted to Forrest that, I mean, really made tremendous efforts to participate in her life. I think that I gave them the greatest gift they ever had. And so that definitely brought joy to all of us. But I wouldn't know a summary, except for to say any time anybody who has a first child is in strange waters. You feel like, I remember one time I gave Forrest a bath. Her umbilical cord had just fallen off, and I could get in the bathtub with her. And so I have her on my legs. I've got my knees up, and she's resting on my legs, and I'm washing her face, and I'm washing under her arms, and I'm washing her legs. I turned her over to wash her back and wash her little bottom and her feet, and then I turned her back, and she was like, almost drowned in the water because her face was in the water the whole time. You know, it's just so much responsibility. It's just so huge for this little creature who's so dependent. It's phenomenal. And somehow they survive.
That was perfect. That was perfect. Excellent. I'm glad you remember that story.
Okay.
That was really,
that was really good. Because there's such a big gap between my birth and the other kids, that it would be a lot of explaining moving and relationships and all that stuff. But Mike's is a really good one. I love that when you tell the story of just telling him
about John. Right? Oh, no, about Mike. Mary, yeah.
So
yeah.
That, so we could probably transition to that now. So maybe you can kind of you can approach it kind of like it's a new story, but you can say in the beginning part that you know that you had a young child, you and your first child who was five moved to Illinois or whatever. Do you know what I mean? Just to kind of give it some.
Can I say Forrest?
Yeah, yeah, you can say Forrest.
But I would definitely say my first child because if we separate them,
okay,
we won't know who Forrest is.
Yes. Okay, okay.
So yeah, you'd say my first child, Forrest, and then from that on point on, you can use my name.
Yeah.
Okay. So start.
Yeah, I would. Yeah.
Okay.
And this can be, so after prefacing the location and stuff, then you can talk about the conception or whatever.
Okay. I moved from Chicago, I moved from New Orleans to Chicago when my first child, Forrest, was 5 years old. And I went to work for, I was engaged to a man that it didn't work out once we started actually living together. And so I moved out on my own and went to work for a man who owned apartment complexes, and his name was Mike. And shortly after I went to work for Mike, he and I started dating. And dating him was difficult because he was very, very hard on his employees. But I thought he would be very, very good to the people in his family. And that wasn't always the case, and so I ended up breaking up with him. When I broke up with him, I went to work for Citibank, but I still lived in the complex that he owned. And so he would see me and my first child, Forrest, walking around the complex, and he would come and visit and things like that. And we ended up getting back together and getting married. And, scratch that. We ended up getting back together. And after 2 years of being back together, I thought I could not have another child, so I didn't practice birth control. And everything was fine for 2 years, and then I ended up getting pregnant. And when I told him that I was pregnant, he said, "You have made me the happiest man in the world." And we planned our wedding right after that. And so the pregnancy with Mary, my second child, was so easy. It is textbook what you would wish it would be. I gained 24 pounds. I was all belly, all baby. The pregnancy, I never had a day of morning sickness. Just perfect. No water retention. It was just a great pregnancy. And I knew from my first pregnancy with Forrest, I did not want to go in the hospital too early. So about midnight, I could feel contractions, real contractions. And I woke Mike up and said, "I'm having contractions, but continue to sleep because it's going to be a while." And I just went in the family room and had my contractions on my own. I practiced my Lamaze really well, so I was really, really using the Lamaze at that time. And Mike woke up, and I told him it's going to be a full day. He was going to go. He played polo. He was going to go ride the horses and come back. And so my sister Judy was there from New Orleans, and I had a little Honda Prelude, and it was a stick shift, and she did not know how to ride it, or drive it. And I was telling her, gosh, Judy, my back is just killing me. Just, I'm in so much pain. And she said, well, call your doctor and tell him you need Paragoric, because Paragoric will stop false labor. I called my doctor. I said, I need Paragoric, because Paragoric will stop false labor. He said, when are you due? And I said, oh, I'm 2 weeks past due. And so he's like, come in. Oh, he said, go to the hospital. And I said, no, I'm not going to the hospital. I've been there, done that. I don't want to go there too early. He said, well, at least come in. So I went in, and I signed my name. I figured they knew that I, you know, was having contractions. And I just sat down, and I waited, and I waited, and I waited. It had to be almost an hour. And I finally went up to the window, and I said, you know, I think I might be in labor. Am I going to get seen soon? They said, Peggy, why didn't you tell us? So I went in, got the room, and I was dilated 7 centimeters. But my sister Judy couldn't drive the stick shift car. So I said, Judy, and we had my first daughter, Forrest, and her son, George, with us. And so I said, well, I just have to go home and wait for Mike. So I went home, I finished making my tuna salad, and Mike came in, and he had finished riding the horses. He asked, do I have time to take a shower? I said, well, I really would wish you didn't. So we got in the car, drove the 7 minutes to the hospital, and when I came in, it was 12 o'clock, and I checked in, and they made me wait for a candy striper to go up to the delivery room. And I waited and waited and waited for a candy striper till my water broke there, and it just gushed out, and it was so embarrassing. So a woman in the emergency room stands up, and she says, I'm an employee here. She said, do you want me to go get you a Kotex to put in your underwear? And I'm thinking, how would I do that? Just slide it in there, right there in the emergency room? So I started to cry. I said, no, I just want to go up to the delivery room. And so finally the candy store, and Mike went ballistic, and he's saying, get me somebody to take her up there. And finally the candy striper came. We went up. I checked in at the emergency room at 12 o'clock. By the time I got up to the room, I barely got laid in the bed and had Mary at 12:20. And so thank goodness we lived close to the hospital. But the delivery was awesome. It was so simple. Mike asked me, you want me to rub your back or what? I said, no, just leave me to do my own thing. And I really did my Lamaze properly. And I didn't even have the episiotomy with Mary, but I did tear. But man, such an easy delivery. Such a different experience from my first child. Baby stayed right there. They put it right to my chest, right to my breast. I remember Mike got a little dizzy. They asked if he was okay, and he went and stood out in the hallway. But it was just so different from my first one, and also so different with just a natural 20-minute delivery. After that, they took me to my room where the baby was right there in the bassinet, which was just so much better for the bonding. And then they came and took Mary away, and I took a shower, and I had a beautiful peignoir set that I had purchased. I put makeup on, did my hair, had my peignoir set on, and Mike came in and he said, you are the most beautiful woman I've ever seen. And it just was like just so perfect. But the better part of that story is he went to Portillo's and bought me a double beef cheeseburger, an order of fries, and a large chocolate shake, which was the best meal I think I've ever had.
I love that contrast, like the just how coiffed you were, and then you're eating this, like, really...
Picture it. I had my... Because back then you had a lot of eyeshadow, remember? Eyeshadow that went from your lower lid to your upper lid. Eyeliner out, red lipstick, and I've got this big, juicy double beef cheeseburger going down. I was so hungry.
So I didn't realize Mike was in the room for the delivery.
Yep.
Was that the case with all of them?
No, he was not there for Caroline.
Well, that's a really good story.
Well, then after I had Mary, I went home 12 hours later because I just felt like you couldn't get any sleep in the hospital. The bad thing about going home 12 hours later was I was also cooking dinner that night and taking care of the baby, and Forrest was such a big help. My first daughter was 7 years older and tremendous, tremendous help.
I thought you were going to say, like, just horrible.
No, you were a tremendous help. I don't, remember I said I don't know how I could have done it without you, because Mike was 15 years older than me, and he was not one of, he never changed a diaper, he never gave a child a bath, never read a child a story. He was not an involved father.
Because when he had his kids, it was kind of that a different generation of...
Yeah, he was an old man. He didn't. He just didn't. It was a different generation. You just didn't do that. You patted them on the head as they walked by. And then with my third child, Caroline, she was a surprise. And Mike and I had gotten annulments from the Catholic Church for our prior marriages. And so we had scheduled a wedding to be married through the church. And sure enough, I was 3 months pregnant with Caroline, just like I was 3 months pregnant with Mary when we got married. But still never showing. With Caroline, I gained 24 pounds. Very easy pregnancy.
We should mention how big they were, too.
It's true.
Because it makes the 22-pound weight gain even stranger, and, you know.
Is there a specific order you want me to mention that in?
No, I mean, you can say both children were...
Okay. I lost my train of thought.
Well, you just mentioned that you weren't showing, and that you'd only gained 22 pounds,
yeah.
Which is why I thought, you know, which is unusual considering how big they were.
Yeah.
You were at the wedding.
So after the wedding, we just proceeded with life as normal. Again, very easy pregnancy, no morning sickness. It was like I was made to have babies. If I could have, I would have been a surrogate mother because it was so easy for me. And Caroline was born November 12th. So prior to that, I was trying to get fruitcake made for the staff. Mike had employed 60 people, and I was making, you know, these one-pound fruitcakes from this woman, this little old lady who really had a very famous fruitcake recipe. So we went to the restaurant that Mike owned, and he stayed in Barrington Hills, and this was by the airport. I can't think of the name of that place. Schiller Park. And so, but I was very big and pregnant. My children, Caroline, Mary, and John, weighed 9.5 pounds each. So I was on my feet all night long trying to make these cheesecakes, or these carrot cakes, trying to make the fruitcakes, and stayed till almost midnight. And when I left, there was a blizzard, and I had a BMW L7, and just trying to drive home, the car was had too much engine for that kind of weather, and I was going 7 miles an hour on the highway, fishtailing the whole way home. I remember being so exhausted. The back pain was so terrible. And then shortly after that, a couple of girlfriends came over to help me wrap the fruitcake for the staff. And I remember thinking, oh, my God, my back is killing me. And I would, this might be gross, but you can edit this out. But I kept having to go number two. And it was just like constant. My back was hurting so badly. And finally, Mike was out of town. He was in Boca Raton, Florida, renting us a house for the winter season. And Lois was there, and what was her name? Gosh, she was a sweetheart, too. I know you...
Eloise?
No, Eloise was not a sweetheart. Fran. Lois and Fran were there to help me wrap the fruitcake. And finally, Lois said, Peg, let's just take you to the hospital. And so she took me. And again, just went in, got set up to the room. They tried to put a fetal monitor on me that it would not take. So they wanted to put one vaginally, and I said no. And so the doctor did not insist upon it. I had an awesome doctor for all of these children. I never had an IV. Never even had to have an IV. He let me just always do it on my own. He was the best doctor ever. And had Caroline that night, and Mike rushed home after, you know, to see after the delivery, and stayed in the hospital 12 hours that night or the next day, and went home again cooking dinner.
He must have just thought you were like Superwoman.
Mike thought I should have a baby a year. No, he really did. He went, because he played polo and he had a herd of 35 ponies, he kept thinking what he should do is what they do with the horses. After 9 days of 9 days after a horse delivers, they breed them back. I was like, no, that's not for me.
How is that even a term?
I know, because they breed them back.
Wow. So why would you take on these like crazy endeavors so far along, pregnant and all that? You just didn't feel you were just comfortable being pregnant to the point.
Well,
where...
Caroline came 2 weeks early. And I was not comfortable being pregnant, but I, you know, it's a sense of responsibility that you have. You want to be Superwoman. So, with a 9-year-old, a 2-year-old, a new baby, why was I making fruitcakes? I don't have any idea.
Yeah, that's amazing. Or when a staff could have done that too.
Hey, look, you can go to Harrod's and buy fruitcake. You don't need to make it. I will tell you, though, it was the best fruitcake I've ever had, and I don't like fruitcake.
Okay, so where are we at? Caroline just got born.
Caroline was born, and it was, again, the awesome delivery room, used all my Lamaze method. Even though she was 2 weeks early, she was 9.5 pounds. The doctor said, thank goodness she was born early, because she would have been 11 pounds.
Was it the same with Mary, where there was a little bassinet and they let you...
It was exactly the same. They put the baby on your chest. You could bond with the child right away. Mike wasn't there, but Lois was there. And she was so close to my children. They called her Granny. And she wanted to help me. I felt bad about this because she wanted to rub my feet or talk to me through the contractions, which... Don't talk to a woman when she's having a contraction, especially if she's practicing Lamaze. It takes effort to try to not tense up and to be relaxed. But I felt really bad because I said, Lois, please just leave me alone. I can do this on my own.
You had tremendous self-control. Can you elaborate on that? Was that a surprise to you? Did you find that you were like that in life?
I don't know if I'd call it self-control. If there's a job to be done, you just have to do it. And if you want to do a job, the easiest way, follow the instructions of people who've done it before and studied it and can walk you through. I was very lucky, too. I didn't have any complications. There was no complications with the babies. Mary had the umbilical cord wrapped around her neck. I had the most phenomenal doctor ever. That was all taken care of, no problem. No child was breech. No child was... I think Caroline was upside down. Her face was up instead of down. But he just turned it... I had the same doctor deliver my last 3 children, and he really is in heaven. I just know it. He was the world's greatest doctor.
It's funny because you'll say, like, everything was fine, and then it's like, oh, well, Mary had this umbilical cord. No, Caroline was upside down.
But those really are a lot of the process of childbirth. And that a lot of people want to have their children at home, but I would not do that just for those specific reasons. Although there are some very, very skilled midwives who know what to do in those cases. But I felt more comfortable being in a hospital.
You also had a doctor that if you said, I don't want this intervention, he didn't insist upon it.
I had a doctor who let me do it myself. He was awesome.
It seems like a lot of times women don't really trust their doctors, and that's a big part of the problem. But did you find that you really felt like you could trust him?
Everybody could trust this doctor. Everybody. When this doctor died, there were thousands of people who came to his funeral. And every one of them had a birthing, delivery, GYN story.
That's amazing. Okay, so Mike, when is the first time Mike sees Caroline?
He saw her the next day in the hospital because, again, I only stayed. I think with Caroline I stayed 10 hours. She was born at night. I went home the next morning.
Were you, not many women have talked about this, but I remember being not shocked, but well, kind of shocked about all the blood afterwards at home. You know, it was like bleeding. It felt like weeks. I don't really remember how long it was. Was that stuff that you, that people talked about, or were you just prepared after having your first birth? And how, the recovery part of it?
The recovery after having a child is hard because every one of them I either tore or I had an episiotomy, and that stitching is it's hard. It's hard to sit down and to recover from. And the hemorrhoids were just so bad. And the bleeding is quite a lot more than you would expect. And it goes on for a lot longer than you would think. I do recall 6 weeks. And I remember I had a two-year-old at home, and I had a new baby, and I would go to the bathroom, and my two-year-old would say, "Mom, do you need any cotton?" Because she knew I had to have another a Kotex to protect from the blood.
It's crazy. It's crazy the amount of, you know, it's like you're, you of course have all those endorphins, and, you know, you're breastfeeding, so there's all this excitement over the newborn, but at the same time, you're like, you know.
It's overwhelming. It is. It's overwhelming. And I remember I would just stay in the hospital such a short time, and I'd come home, and I would cook dinner and feed babies. And I just remember one time when Mary was little, probably 4 months old, all I wanted to do was sit down and have a quiet meal. Just, and I can eat fast. I just wanted to sit down and finish my meal. And the babies always started at, right at mealtime. And this is after I'd cooked a meal, set the table, just wanted to sit down and have a meal. So I put her in my bedroom. And she was little. She should not have really been moving around that much. I don't really think she was even 4 months old. And when I came back, after 15, maybe 7 minutes, she was nowhere to be found. I was panicking. Where is she? And she cried herself so hard, she'd crawled herself under the bed and fallen asleep. And I was in a panic. Like, where was she?
Like someone had nabbed her.
Yeah. Or God had taken her away. I didn't deserve her. I don't know.
That is so funny because it always comes back to that. Because it's always, you know, you feel like it's punishment. You've taken this moment to yourself. And
oh, yeah. I remember so many years, no showers, without children in the bathroom. All of my last three children were potty trained at 18 months because they went to the bathroom with me every single time. They knew exactly what to do. I never had a bowel movement without a child in the bathroom.
Did you resent Mike's kind of whatever that way of parenting was, the aloofness or his non-engagement with that process? I mean, you must have had friends that had younger husbands. Were they different?
You know, I didn't have much socialization with people that had young children because Mike was 15 years older than me. And he was very powerful and ran a big business. And his work was really very consuming. And I had a father who had six children. And he just was never really one of those dads that you see today either. So I was used to that. I was used to a father who didn't change diapers, who didn't feed the kids, who didn't read them bedtime stories. And to, in my opinion, it's very, very sad for that father because he's missed out on some of the biggest joys of having children. And they don't know what they're missing.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you know that when we talked to BK, you just was like, I don't know, I just...
They just didn't do it.
Worked all the time,
mm-hmm.
You know. Okay, and then 9 months later, or when did you get pregnant again? Can you go from... Because it sounds like you're, you know, you have a kid in each hip, you're doing all this stuff, and... But it's still having a good sex life.
So John, Caroline was November 12th, 86, and John was August 30th, 88. So November, so a year and 7 months. A year and 7 months later, I was pregnant with my fourth child, who was planned because my husband Mike wanted to have a little boy so bad. Even though he'd had two boys from a previous marriage, he wanted to have a boy. And I said, Mike, I'm not going to have a baby one after the other until you get a boy. I'm not sure I would have a boy. My father had six daughters. So many of my sisters had girls. I only had one sister that had boys at that time. And so I said, I will ask my OBGYN what I can do. When I went to see him, he said I could go to a clinic that did a lot of fertility work, but that they could do sex selection. And so I went to the clinic, talked to the doctor, and he indeed said, yes, that was an option for me. So Mike and I went to the clinic. Mike would go into the room and give his specimen, and they tested it, and it was had 50 million sperm, so there was no low sperm count, but it was higher on the female. And so what they did was they washed the sperm. They spun it and washed it and separated male from female. And so the day that we were going in, of course, Mike, running his business, always so busy, we went in, and Mike gave his sample. They put me in the room, injected the sample, and instead of Mike sitting there talking to me, giving me a kiss on the cheek, holding my hand, he was out in the hallway talking on the phone. And I do remember laying there, because they put your hips higher than your head, and I do remember the tears rolling down my eyes into my ears, just feeling so alone at that moment of conception. And but you know, you just sort of bucked it up then. You know, you knew that was a battle you weren't going to win. You're not going to change the core of who someone is. So then, of course, you wait and wait and wait and continue with the pregnancy until it comes time to find out if it's a boy or a girl. And Mike was again in Florida. And I found out, we were all in Florida, actually. And I found out that I called the doctor and he said, yes, it is a boy. And I was so excited for Mike, really. And he was playing a polo match then. And I thought, you know what I might do? I might get an airplane and have it fly over the polo field and say, Mike, it's a boy. But I thought, oh, what a silly expense. You know, I can tell him myself. So after the game, we went out, and I told him, you know, Mike, I know you really wanted a boy. I found out the sex of the baby. Are you going to be okay if it's a girl or if it's a boy? And he was really like, oh, gosh, it's another girl. I said, it's a boy. And he was so excited. And then I told him that I had planned on maybe doing the airplane thing. And he said, I wish you'd have done that. It would have been awesome. But who knows, you know.
So did you just, like, get pregnant right away after the sex insemination?
I was pregnant right away. Mike and I really almost never even had to talk about having a baby. Or we could talk about it, never had to have the act. I would just talk about it and be pregnant.
Why did you not think you could get pregnant after your first?
I was actually told that because of the DNC, there was scarring.
But then you had a baby.
But I had another
miscarriage. That's interesting. So with a different man?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Was that a relief? This is off the record, but it just sort of.
It was so fast. It was like I didn't even know I was pregnant, and then I lost it. Mm-hmm. You know, so it was like no time to get worried or no time. I don't think I even told him.
Yeah.
You know, it's like. But then with that.
And then it impacted the rest of your life, so you thought.
So I thought, yeah. But you know, I would have been happy with one baby. I'd be happy with one grandchild.
Yeah, it's too bad you couldn't have babies for the rest of us.
I know. So then after that, with that pregnancy, everything, I remember being so boggled with just the responsibility of three children and two so close together. I remember being in Florida, and Mary was fussing, and I had Caroline in my arms, and I'm trying to make dinner reservations because we had such a social life, which sounds like wah, wah. But I gave Caroline the cap to a Perrier bottle, and she's like putting it in her mouth, and it's like going down her throat. You know, it's like just taking care of so much responsibility. Thank goodness nothing happened, but all I'm saying is it's so overwhelming. But that pregnancy went well. Again, gained about 22, 24 pounds. When it came time for delivery, I went in, same doctor, and, you know, didn't have to have an IV. Mike was there. The doctor said, Peg, do you mind if I have some interns come in, because I'd like them to see what a natural childbirth is like. And I said, no, that's okay. Well, I expected one or two interns to come in. There were literally doctors lining the walls of the delivery room. And the baby just came out. Again, episiotomy, stitching up, and on my chest, bonding. Absolutely adorable. So glad I had a little boy. The relationship is just so special. And Mike was happy, and all was right with the world.
Can you mention, because I think it's quite funny, how you had agreed to the third child, but then you wanted to have help for the rest of your life?
I had agreed to having the third child, the boy. I had Mike sign a piece of paper that said I could have live-in care for the children as long as I wanted. If they lived at home till they were 30, if I wanted live-in care, I could have live-in care. And so, and that really was a deciding factor for me, because I knew I was in over my head. And unfortunately, 2 years later, on Mother's Day, Mike beat me up, broke my nose, and I got divorced, and I had no live-in care. So it was I was in an overwhelming situation.
You were truly a single parent.
I was truly a single parent, and remained that way until John was 15, Caroline was 17, Mary was 19, and you were 26.
How old were you? When you and Dick were together? I think I was in graduate school. I graduated grad school and started teaching college at 23, so I was 21, 22.
I think when I met Dick, John was 11, but we married at 13. When John was 13. So 11, 13, 15, and you would have been 23, 24, yeah.
Gosh, yeah, I'm always wrong with that. I always think it was
me too.
Sooner. Well, can you kind of reflect on that experience? I mean, it's hard to say on record you regretted having the kids or anything.
Oh, no, I never did regret having the kids. But I will say it was hard. It was hard because I had myself and three children. Mike, fortunately, was wealthy enough that I didn't have to work. I can't imagine